Welcome to OUJYC's Humminger Shop QC. We're about to jump in to our first shiur on Sefer Bereishit, proper on Parshat Bereishit. It's an incredible limud. Again, it's a limud that we just discovered that we're going to be doing not just over the semester, but we'll be doing over the entire year. It's an incredible sefer, a dense sefer, starting with one of the most difficult parshiot to try to teach, Parshat Bereishit. I want to say before we start, I didn't mention this last year, that the majority of the material in the shirim is from my Rebbe, from his Chumash Shirim, Rav Amos Luban, who is still our Rebbe to this day at Yeshivat Tivarie. But I want to put an asterisk next to that, because over time I've been studying his Chumash Shirim, but beyond that also studying Chumash for between 10 and 15 years now. This is now the second time I'm teaching Chumash Bereishit from his Shirim with his foundations. And even this morning I was going to just, go over my notes and to re-prepare the shiur. 3 hours later, I wasn't even done yet, because when you come back to the material with all the things that when I come back to the material with all the things that I've learned and all the learning we've done together in the Midrashah over the last 3 years, and seeing Sefer Bereishit with fresh eyes and looking at the sources with fresh eyes, you'll see sources on this sheet that you totally didn't see if you had been here three years ago. So the shiurim are definitely based on my Rebbe's Torahs, but they've also taken on, thank God, a life of their own. Rebbe encourages people to be mitbonein, to think critically, to see what they can find in the Emes of Torah themselves. And I feel like it is a testament to his Derech HaLimud and the fact that he just had to think and not just what to think, that the shirim have evolved and become somewhat different, but they still are, B'Shem Omro. The primary, the core material is certainly based on the shirim of my Rebbe Rav Amos Luban. Let's jump into Parshat Bereishit. We talked in the introductory shiur about the importance of structure, about the fact that Sefer Bereishit is going to have its own themes, its own identity, its own narrative, and that each of the parts of Sefer Bereishit, each one of the parashot, are going to have also their own structure and their own themes. So if we just open up Parshat Bereishit, and we take a look, as we talked about last time, at the Ptuchot and Stumot, at the way that the Chumash is broken down, the way the Torah is broken down, based on how it was given to Moshe Rabbeinu, as we see in the Sefer Torah, and hopefully in all of your Chumashim, open up your Chumashim and see, what are the primary topics? What are the primary topics in Parshat Bereishit? If you don't have a chumash yet, make sure to bring one next time. For now, share with your neighbor. Take a look inside your chumash. You need to see the chumash inside. What's the first topic? Create neighbors. If you don't have good neighbors, you have to move. Or the Rosh Hashanah, I know. If you don't have good neighbors, you have to move. Everybody here's a tzaddikus, but if you don't have good neighbors, you have to move. Yes. Let's go. Come on, everybody. Look at the structure of Parshat Bereishit. What are the primary topics in Parshat Bereishit?
So, Hashem created
the creation of the world.
Yeah.
Part one, great, good. Parshat Bereishit. The first thing that we have is, let's call it, for us, Sheshet Minei Bereishit. Right? Now, you made a good point. I mean, it was inherent in your words, which is, it's interesting that though it's clear that these 7 days create one singular unit, the Chumash goes out of its way after each day to do what? To divide it and put a parshat tucha, emphasizing that each day is unique and it itself has its own identity. But for our purposes, in terms of the broad strokes of the parsha, the first 7 paragraphs of the 7 days of creation, Shabbat. And as an aside, also, as you pointed out last time, that we'll be using them for reference but not for meaning, what do you notice immediately about a structure that is already not so useful to us? The prakim, that for whatever reason that I don't know, when it was divided up, in terms of prakim, Shabbat's not part of the 7 days of creation. It seems sort of intuitive that you would definitely want to put it in that first group, that first parak. Why it is that that's parak bet, kim aleph, or gimel? So the answer is it doesn't matter. There's no inherent kedushah to that breakdown, and we're only using it for reference. Okay? So we have all the way until, from parak aleph pasuk aleph until parak bet pasuk gimel, shein bit rish for Shabbat. And then what do we have after that?
The story of Gan Eden.
Before we go forward, what's odd about the fact that the story of Gan Eden is next? Because it's a big question where it is. What's the implication of the structures we have on the board so far? Then it happened right after the 7 days of creation. Meaning, Motzei Shabbat, what happens? Adam and Chava sins on day 8. We'll see that that's not the way that Chazal view it, and that's not what happens. But we have to understand, why is it that there is a clear break in the parshiot, in the paragraphs? Why is the story coming after Sheish Nebrei and Mishav? Why is it not within the first paragraph? Why not put it within the middle of day 6? Is it separate? Is it not separate? What's happening there? What is the structure trying to tell us in separating the story of Gan Eden out of the Sheish Nebrei Sheets? That's going to be next Monday's shiur. What's part 3?
Good. Cain and Hevel.
The story of Cain and Hevel. The first bout of sibling rivalry, which is good, because if any of you have siblings, can't get worse than that, right? No matter what you did, it didn't get that bad, hopefully. If it did, we can talk afterward, right? Cain and Hevel is where things already seem to be post-Gan Eden and already starting to spiral out of control. And then after the paragraph about Cain and Hevel and the later generations of Cain, we have the last part of the Parsha. So who said that? No, not the Dor HaPalaga. That's the end of Parsha Noah.
The 10 generations.
We have the 10 generations, which take us from Adam to Noah, and that's the bridge to Parsha Noah. We have what is introduced in the Pesukim as Toldot Adam. But what we'll talk about those 10 generations from Adam to Noah. That's the broad strokes of Parshat Bereishit. Again, isn't it amazing? Just first of all, take in the fact that if you are not bogged down in a chumash with all of these mefarshim, if you're able to just look in and take in the text that Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us, suddenly the parsha is able to stack itself. It's able to give itself structure. Now we have to understand again. We have the biggest question on the board is why is Gan Eden separated out from Sheish and Bereishit? That we're going to definitely have to deal with explicitly. But that leads to them leaving Gan Eden, and the first thing out of Gan Eden that we know about is Cain and Hevel. And then once evidently we deal with whatever it is that's happening up until the end of the Cain and Hevel story, which really concludes with Dor Enosh and the sins that happened there, then we have the bridge between everything that happened from the beginning to Noah himself. That's Parshat Bereishit. Yes?
I don't understand the question about the Shabbos and
the Torah. Based on the structure, we could have erroneously thought, incorrectly thought, that we have creation which takes 7 days. Then the Torah says, okay, and here's what happened to Adam. Adam sinned. So when did Adam sin? On day 8, after Shabbos. But when did Adam sin? Based on Chazal, what do we know? When did Adam sin? On day 6. He sinned while he was in Gan Eden. Many Midrashi Chazal that clarify that is absolutely when he sinned. That all took place on the 6th day. And we'll see there are even crossovers in terms of when things are created that get all kind of weird and out of order and indifferent. The whole presentation in Prakim, Bet, and Gimel, in the story of Gan Eden and the Chet, everything is out of order as it relates to Perek Aleph. Chelek Aleph. So we'll have to figure out, why is it retelling that story? Why doesn't it appear in there? Why is what appears in there appear in a different order? There's a lot of murkiness happening in parts 1 and 2. And that again we'll come back to. But for today, what I want to focus on is just part 1. I want to talk about Sheishet Yemei Bereishit v'Shabbat. Okay, that's going to be our focus for today. We'll come back to blending it into the next pieces, already starting next shiur. Creation itself is clearly a system of 7. Again, as we said before, it has 7 distinct parts. Those 7 distinct parts are indicated as having their own unique identities by the very fact that the Chumash itself gives each one a parsha p'tucha. That after each one, Kilo HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Moshe Rabbeinu, stop, contemplate, and take in. It's only a few psukim, but the essence of 1 and everything that it comes along with is Yom Rishon. The essence of 2 and everything that 2 comes along with Yom Sheni. The essence of three, and everything that three comes along with, is Yom Shlishi. Each day is its own unit, but the seven create this the process of creation, which takes place as a unit, a process of seven. There are two systems of seven that clearly parallel this system. I want to lay out these three systems, then try to figure out what unifies them to bring out the depth of each of these systems. The first system that we're going to talk about that parallels the system of the 6 days of creation and Shabbat is all of history itself. All of history itself. One is creation, two is the history of the world, and three is, more intuitively, but we'll talk about it, the depth of it, is every single week in which we live. We go through a process, week in and week out, of 6 days leading to Shabbat, of 6 days leading to Shabbat, just like there were in creation. And we'll talk about the parallels of these two things, of these three things. Where do we see the concept? Where do we see the concept that there's a parallel between the creation story and all of history? Take a look at source number 3 on your source sheets. We're told by Chazal here, and I believe in a few other places, the first underline at the beginning of source number 3. Amar of Katina, Sheet Alfei Shnei Havi Alma, the Chad Charuv. Chazal tell us that the entire history of the world is 6,000 years long, followed by a seventh millennia. Charuv means of destruction, where things are destroyed. Somewhat cryptic gemara. That the history of the world takes place as a process of 6,000 years. Where are we in there, by the way? Five, seven, 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 right? Almost eight, we're about to cross that border. Right, we're actually pretty far along in that 6,000 year process. But that's what we're counting towards. That's the process that we exist in. That it's a 6,000 year process with a group of seven at the end. What's interesting about that parallel? Same thing like Bereshit, again, a process of 6 days of creation, followed by Shabbat, which is clearly distinct in its own way. So too here, we have 6,000 years, followed by a seventh millennia, which stands on its own, has its own unique identity in that way. The depth of the parallel is actually brought out beautifully by the verse. If you take, go one source up, source number 2. The Torah tells us, Ki shesh etamim asa Hashem et hashamayim ve'et ha'aretz. Look at the words carefully. How would you translate those words? Ki sheshet yamim asa Hashem et hashamayim v'et ha'aretz. What's the beginning of the translation?
Because
6 days. We've done this before. So, okay. Or you just intuitively understood that.
Probably done it.
Okay. Most people translate it as, in 6 days did God create the heavens and the earth, and he rested on the seventh. But how would you phrase it if it said, in 6 days did God create the heavens and the earth? Ki b'sheishetim asah shem v'lashamay v'et ha'aretz. Many see this as a hint of the fact that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when God created the world, what was the intention? God created the world to be 6 days long. The world was only supposed to be 6 days long. Adam HaRishon was given a command. He was given a mitzvah. The mitzvah was, don't eat from the eighth Hadat Tov Bara. Had he fulfilled the mitzvah lo ta'aseh of not eating from the Eitz Hadat Tov Bara, then he would have gone into that seventh day, and that would have been the end of history. That would have been Olam Haba. The end. He would have done everything that he needed to do in this world to move on to Olam Haba. That's what we say on Shabbat when we say, Harachaman hu yanchilinu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, may you grant us Yom Shekulo Shabbat, a day of eternal Shabbat, La'ad Le'Belamim. What is the eternal Shabbat that we're asking for? Olam Haba. Why are we calling it an eternal Shabbat? Because that was the Shabbat that we were supposed to have at the beginning of creation. And because Adam HaRishon, Adam and Chava, because they sin in Gan Eden, that shifts the way that history is going to play out, and instead of playing out as 6 days leading into Shabbat, instead we have 6,000 years, a longer process of doing what we need to accomplish in this world, now that we've made mistakes that we also have to fix, 6,000 years in this world leading into a seventh millennium. The third parallel, as we said before, and now we understand also why it's separate, is the week that we live in every single week. Those weeks were not necessarily the intention at the beginning of creation. There was only supposed to be 1 week. And in fact, many of the Sfarim point out that the entire place in which a week draws itself from, where does it get its koach to exist every single week? From Shabbat. That Shabbat gives birth to the next week. I underlined it for you in the bottom of source number one. At the end of the 7 days of creation, that many point out to the source of bracha and kedusha, but the source of bracha for the entire world. That every single week, a new week is born through that Shabbat. That the world has no right to existence after that. And so each week is its own entity, and we live in these weeks, week in and week out, of 6 days leading to a Shabbat, of 6 days leading to a Shabbat, which also we experience as Jews, we experience that. That there's a natural process there of some sort of end point and a new beginning. Yeah?
If before we said that it's 6,000 years leading to a seventh of destruction,
we'll come back to it. We'll come back to it. In like 2 or 3 minutes. Okay? We'll come back to it. First, let's talk about what the meaning is of these parallels. And then once we have more content of those 6,000 years, which is where a lot of this shir sort of came from. I wasn't going to spend as much time on it. And then I was preparing shir this morning. And I was like, we have to do all this stuff. This is too amazing. We have to do all this stuff. So we'll get more into those 6,000 years. And we'll add that in as well. So what is the meaning that comes out of these parallels? We're always going to be looking for definitions, understandings, insights, and observations based on common denominators of a few different branches. Where do they unite? What's their unified root? What justifies them all being branches of the same tree? So what's the underlying concept here? Is that seven, a process of seven is just that. It's a process. Seven is the number of process. Seven is the number of any creative process. The definitional creation itself is Sheshit Yemei Bereishit. And therefore, all other processes of seven are going to model themselves off of that as being processes of creation. And it therefore seems that all processes of creation are meant to go through 6 stages to reach a level of perfection, and the reality of living inside of that perfection, that's the reality of the seventh. Clear? Let's open it up. Let's open it up. So we see that by the creation story. Let's start with that. Again, 6 days of creation. Take a look inside, again, in source number one, which is the end of the Sheshit Yemei Bereishit. Look at even the way that it's framed. We work all of the way through day one, day two, day three, day four, day five, day six, and you have the second half of day six to its conclusion on your source sheets and your Chumashim. You can take a look at the end of Perek Aleph. At the very end of the sixth day, Perek Aleph, Pasuk Lamed Aleph, Vayar Elokim et kol asher asa, v'hine tov me'od. After every day it says what? Hine tov. Day one is tov, day two is missing tov, so there's two tovs by day three, day four is tov, day five is tov, and now we're at a reality of tov me'od. Why are we tov me'od? HaKadosh Baruch Hu was now looking back at the entire process of creation, and as it's reached its completion, he now sees it as tov me'od. and can move into a reality of seven, into a reality of Shabbat. Or rather, he does that to teach us that there's a process of six going into seven. He doesn't need to do that. He's doing that to show us that that's the reality that we're experiencing. And then moves into a reality of Shabbat. What is it that reaches its perfection over the course of the 6 days of creation? What's being perfected?
System in which one can be Shabbat.
That's very deep. Simplify. What is being perfected on a simple pshat level? What is being perfected over the course of the 6 days of creation?
The world.
Vayar Elokim et kol asher atzav v'inei tov meod. He looks around at the entire world, and the world has reached a level of perfection. The world reaches its state of perfection by this end of the sixth day and the end of the 7 days of creation. If that's the case, let's move on now to our second of the parallels. All of history. If the world has reached a level of perfection by the end of the 6 days and the seventh day of creation, why have history at all? What are we perfecting? What's the nature of the process? What's trying to get to a perfected state that will only experience that at the end of those 7,000 years? If we're claiming that Shishit Mibrashis, over those 7 days, the world is perfected, and the world reaches its perfection by the end, so then good, we're done. End history. Clearly something isn't perfected. What is it? Why do we have history itself? Why do we have 6,000 years? Why do we have, plus another 7th millennia, why do we have 7,000 years? What are we perfecting in that process? Give it a proper noun instead of a pronoun. What is ourselves?
Yeah.
Mankind. Humanity. Which is what he meant. I don't think he meant just the 13 of us in this room. Right? Humanity. That the 6,000 years, the one aspect of creation that it seems is not yet at a reality of perfection, is humanity. And the process of history is the process of the perfection of the human condition. Is the process of the creating a perfect civilization, of creating a perfect humanity. That's the goal of history. That's the avoda that we're doing that happens over history. Over the 7 days of creation, the world is perfected. The world that we live in is perfected. But the one thing that's left that isn't, has not yet reached a state of perfection, is mankind. Had they not sinned, then we would not have had to go through that history. We will intentionally and openly discuss that we're not going to address that next year. Okay? Let's give it time. But either way, they definitely sinned. There definitely was a chet, so we know that something went wrong. Whether it was intended or not, again, we'll not answer next time. But whether it was intended or not, leave on the side. They definitely sinned, something definitely broke, and now we have history to fix that. And the goal of the 6,000 years is to perfect history. Is to perfect humanity over the course of history. If we take a look in your source sheets, go back to that same Gemara. Source number 3. The Gemara actually opens up a little bit more the nature of that historical process. This is one of the most fundamental things to understand is this process of 6,000 years. We're going to come back to it many times. In your learning, you'll probably encounter it many times. This concept that history itself takes place over 6,000 years. Not only that, the Gemara itself divides it into 3 groups. Take a look at the bottom of source number 3. Tana Devei Eliyahu. Sheshet alafim shana have alma, 6,000 years is the history of the world. Shnei alpayim tohu. The first 2,000 years are 2,000 years of tohu, a void of nothingness. Then you have shnei alpayim Torah, 2,000 years of Torah. And then shnei alpayim imot hamashiach, 2,000 years of imot hamashiach. I'd never fully understood exactly how to understand that. I happened to have come across Kadosh Baruch Hu coming in the direction of in Or Gedaliah, where he says explicitly two things that are important here. He says, number one, that the nature of each of these 2,000 years is that that thing, whether it's Tohu, Torah, or Yemot HaMashiach, it's unfolding over the course of those 2,000 years. It starts at that point, and then for the next 2,000 years, it unfolds and reveals itself in its totality by the end of those 2,000 years. Which makes sense. That's why we didn't experience Mashiach at year 4,000. But we are definitely, people talk about all the time, that we're in Ikvat HaMashiach, or the beginning of the Geula, however people want to see it or frame it in their own Hashkafic realities with the world that we're living in. We've been living in a reality of Yemot HaMashiach that's been slowly unfolding for 1,777 years. We're living in that stage. We're living in that part of the reality. And the same thing, Tohu was unfolding for the first 2,000 years. Torah was unfolding for the next 2,000 years. So let's even define it. So we know for sure that Tohu began to unfold. Tohu is a reality of nothingness, is a breakdown of reality. And what happens in Parshiot Bereshit and Noach? Reality breaks down. We will see, we will be discussing at length the nature of the breakdown of reality over the course of those first 2,000 years. And at around the year 2000, who's born? Avraham. And Avraham is the beginning of the unfolding of a reality of Torah in the world. Chazal tell us that Avraham Avinu himself, that he was able to learn out all of the mitzvot aseh and the mitzvot aseh from his insides. He was literally able to be dorish them from reality. Technically, the Gemara says he was dorish all the mitzvot aseh with his right kidney and the lo taseh from his left kidney. Everyone understand that. He kept all the Torah according to an explicit pasuk in Parshat Toldot. But the beginning of the unfolding of Torah, which then produces over the which then unfolds over the course of the Avos and the Imaos and Bnei Israel, and then actually Matan Torah itself, and then the proliferation of Torah Sheba'al Peh over the course of generations, that's all happening in these Alpayim Tohu. Excuse me, these Alpayim Torah. What happens at around the year 4000? Korban Bayit Sheni. So what happens immediately from the moment after Korban Bayit Sheni? It's the long road towards Yemot HaMashiach. It's the long road of Yemot HaMashiach. The long road to Bayit Shlishi, which will be the final Beit HaMikdash. The other thing he points out, which I hadn't understood beforehand, is that he presumes, he says it black on white, through Gedaliah, is that this process of 6,000 years begins the day after Sheshit Bereshit. The day after that first Shabbat. Which is also helpful in the fact that the world, if you date things, can go back much farther. This paradigm doesn't include the first 6 days of creation, which gives you a lot more room to maneuver. It starts from the day after Adam left Gan Eden, which is day 8. So 2,000 years of Tohu that eventually brings humanity to its lowest point and produces Avraham, who begins 2,000 years of building towards Torah, the reality of how we're meant to live, and then 2,000 years of Yemot HaMashiach, and when we get to the end of that, where are we? We have Beit HaMikdash, we have a Giloy of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the world. It's all centered around Yerushalayim and Beit HaMikdash of the Jewish people. That is when humanity reaches its ultimate perfected state, which we said was the goal of what history was actually setting out to accomplish.
Well, let's say when we do 6,000, it's not perfected, like people are not.
There's actually a Gemara that says that there are two ways that it could go down. That either we push ourselves to achieve a level of perfection, or HaKadosh Baruch Hu will put upon us a king as evil as Achashverosh, I believe it says, not Haman, I think it's Achashverosh, who will force us to do tshuva. One way or another, we'll come there. Yeah, for those who... I don't understand the exact nuances of the numbers and how, where exactly each thing is going to happen, but that's how the Gemara presents it. Once we get past, or coming back to your question, Chavi, then we go into reality where there's Tchiyat HaMetim. Tchiyat HaMetim requires that. What's the prerequisite for Tchiyat HaMetim? Things to die. That's the Achad Charuv. That's the 1,000 years where everything will die out and then be reborn in its perfected state. Not our topic for right now, but you asked about the Achad Charuv. That's a little bit of what's going on with the Achad Charuv. Let's take it forward. If we do have this line of beginning of this 2000 of Tohu, these are the Erech birds, let's pretend. This is Torah, and this is Mot HaMashiach. Let's take a look at one other critical point on this scale. What would be the center line? What's the center line? Years. What? What happens in the center of that structure? We said here, so Bravara Rabinu here is formed by a chain. Anybody knows what happens around the year 3000? Which significant individual? We have David HaMelech. David HaMelech, who stands at the center of history itself. One second. We'll get there. Yeah. He seems to be the focal point of all of history. Now, once again, we turn to Chazal, and we see this explicitly reflected in Chazal. Chazal saying in source number 4, we're not going to read the whole Midrash because of lack of time. Plus, we wouldn't read the whole Midrash anyway. It's a very long Midrash, a very beautiful Midrash. The Midrash is in Parshat Bo because it's dealing with the topic of Achodesh HaZelachem. That the first mitzvah that Jewish people receive is the mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh and relating ourselves to the moon. And it discusses how the Jewish people literally reflect the moon. How so? How long does it take the moon to build itself up from its very beginning until its pinnacle, until its height? 15 days. And who is it that reaches that pinnacle? Who is it that takes Jewish history to its pinnacle so it actually goes through? And it says that from Avram Avinu, if you walk through 14 generations, you get to David. That David HaMelech is the person who brings the moon of Klal Yisrael to its complete height, to its fullness. And therefore, David HaMelech was able to produce Shlomo HaMelech. But that David is the moon at its height. David is the full moon of Klal Yisrael. And then, incredibly, that it reflects itself historically, we then see 14 generations later, what do we get to? What happens? Slow decline. 14 generations, no, it's ancient history. A slow decline as the moon gets smaller and smaller and smaller, and we don't reflect the light of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this world. Eventually brings us to Korb Mayit Rishon. 14 generations, like the moon, 14 days taking it to its height, the full moon stage, that is David HaMelech. Shlomo is that Shlemut, but things break apart in his time, and we start to wane and go down till we disappear at Korb Mayit Rishon. But the Medrash is bringing out the fact that David HaMelech stands there in the center. He is the centerpiece of Jewish history. He is the height of the moon. He is the part of history where the moon is in full, where Klal Yisrael shines in full. This goes along beautifully with an incredible Mamar Chazal. I saw many quote it when I looked it up from the Arizal. It may or may not come from the Zohar. It's not clear to me, but certainly from the Arizal. If you take a look at source number 5, Vita Meha Arizal, that Adam, that the word Adam itself is an acronym. Adam itself is an acronym for Adam, who starts history, that's the Aleph of his own name. David is the Dalet. And Mashiach, which is the Mem. that since Adam, we're talking about Sefer Bereshit, these are the origins of all things, and Adam HaRishon was the origin of all things, he contained within him the process of all of human history. And his very name is hinting to the nature of that process. Adam contains within him Adam to David to Mashiach. Benjamin. All linking back to the same thing. Which then links into another Mamar Chazal. Because they all link into each other, because Torah is all one. And when you start to learn this stuff, it makes you just, your mind wants to, you just want to jump up and down. So I do sometimes. You just want to jump up and down. It's so amazing. I've heard this Mamar Chazal quoted, and I searched endlessly till I could find it, until I realized when they said Mamar Chazal, they meant a Zohar. Many of you have probably heard it before. I didn't realize, certainly didn't realize that it was a Zohar. The Zohar says as follows. It says that David HaMelech, when the world was created, had no life of his own. And he was never going to be born. Where does David HaMelech, says the Zohar, get the 70 years of his life from? From Adam HaRishon. So that's the Zohar in source number 6. That's where he gets the 7 years of his life from. That Adam HaRishon was supposed to have lived a full 1,000 years. He dies at 930 years because he gives 70 years of his life to David HaMelech. David HaMelech is living out the reality of Adam HaRishon because he's the one who takes Adam HaRishon to his next stage. And from David, who's from Adam, comes the conclusion of history, which is Mashiach ben David. It's all one process. The unfolding of history that reaches its tikkun is the tikkun of humanity coming from Adam HaRishon himself. Through Adam David Mashiach. Through the process of Tohu, Torah, and Yemot Mashiach. It's the unfolding of the perfection of humanity. Then I thought to myself, probably not stunned that how many years did Adam give David HaMelech? 70. Going back to our issues of 7. And the continuation of the Zohar, if you want to look it up, which is not on your sheets, addresses that explicitly. That it was intentionally 70, relating to 7. And now that I've seen that Zohar, we will now link it into our Lech Lechashir when we get to that point. But it's not stuff. It was very exciting. I was like, oh, it must be intentional. And I kept reading that, and I kept reading down the Zohar, and it was right there. Yeah.
I was going to say that, is it the same
common era? It doesn't, the numbers there don't explicitly mean anything, since they're not, they don't emanate from Torah. Probably not coincidence, but also not necessarily inherently meaningful. Okay. Last piece of our discussion. Let's make the last parallel. What was the last level of parallel? The creation story, all of history, and every week of our lives. What we've been learning this shiur is incredibly practical every single week of our lives. What did we say the process of 6 leading to 7 is? It's a process of creation and perfection. The implications for us are tremendous. That means that the reality of every single week that we live in, we're meant to be creative. We're expected to be creative. We're expected to perfect ourselves on some level every single week. That's what we're supposed to do. Whether we're perfecting the world itself, we're perfecting our midot, we're perfecting our understanding of Avodas Hashem or of HaKadosh Baruch Hu or of Torah. We're meant to every single week, we're expected to work to achieve, to create, and to achieve levels of perfection every single week. That's what it means when it says, source number 7, Zachor et yom ha'shavat l'kadsho, sheish etimim ta'avod v'asita kol melachtecha. It doesn't say, you are allowed to work for 6 days. You are allowed to do melacha for 6 days. What does it say?
You must.
You must. It's almost like a command. Sheish etimim ta'avod, you shall work for 6 days. You shall do melacha for 6 days. Adam la'amal yulad. We're put in this world in order to work. And a true week is a week that lives up to Sheish Devei Bereishit. Is a week where we're working to create. We're working to live in the image of God and create in this world. Within the world itself and within our own olam katan, in our own small internal world. The world that is each one of ourselves. What then is Shabbat? Shabbat is no more and no less than embracing and enjoying everything that we've created and accomplished and perfected over the course of the week. That's the content of Oneg Shabbat. We're meant to have Oneg Shabbat. It's learned out from a pasuk in Yeshayahu, source number 8, the Karata la Shabbat Oneg. There are halachic implications of this pasuk all throughout the Chol Shabbat. We have to have Oneg Shabbat. Where does Oneg Shabbat come from? My Oneg Shabbat comes from what I achieved during the week. To say it very strongly, if I spent all week and I didn't create and I didn't perfect, then I won't have anything in my Shabbat. My Shabbat will be empty. And if I spend my week working and working and working and doing melacha to create in the world and in myself, I will have Oneg Shabbat, which will be everything that I accomplished over that week. On Shabbat, we stop creating and we stop building and we stop doing to pause, to reflect and to take in everything that we've accomplished. God taught us that in Shabbat Bereishit. He didn't need Shabbat. We need Shabbat. And He taught us that that's the process of 6 is the process of creation, and 7 is taking in, gathering in everything that we've accomplished. Reflecting on that, internalizing that, and enjoying the oneg that is basking in what we have accomplished and created over the course of that week. That's why I saw this yesterday. I was at a wedding last night, and I was reading Mishnah Berurah, waiting for the chuppah to start. And I read this last night and I was like, it's going on the source sheet. Read it last night. Where it says, the Mishnah Berurah brings it down, halacha l'maaseh, katvu asfarim, source number 9, yeharher b'tshuva v'yifashvesh ma'asav b'chol erev Shabbat. That every erev Shabbat, a Jew is expected to do tshuva and to check their ma'asav, to check their actions on erev Shabbat. Why? To make sure that there is nothing broken in what I've created. To check and make sure that there isn't anything broken in my internal systems. As I walk into Shabbat, I'm supposed to be walking into a reality of perfection and trying to do tshuva to fix anything that I may have broken over the course of the week. Anything that hasn't come to a place of perfection. Because that's my reality of Shabbat. Because Shabbat is me'ein olam haba. Again, seeing a perfect parallel of the original Shabbat, which is supposed to be eternal. That was supposed to be the Shabbat la'ad olam alamin. This 7th millennia, the Shabbat of history, which is Yimot HaMashiach Tiyat HaMetim, that's a reality of olam haba. And then every week we experience a me'ein olam haba. The implications there are also very deep and very astounding. Just like my entire reality on Shabbat is nothing more and nothing less than what I accomplished during the week, that means that so too, my whole reality in Olam Haba is no more and no less than what I accomplished in my work in this world over a lifetime. The two are one and the same. That's what I'm talking about then. The world to come, Olam Haba is also referred to as Olam Ha-Emet. It's a world of truth. There's no gifts in Shemayim. There's no gifts in heaven. There's no gifts in Olam Haba. In Olam Haba, I am no more and no less than what I've accomplished in this world. That's why we have a microcosm of that in every single week. My Olam Haba is no more and no less than what I've accomplished in this world. It's the same exact thing. And therefore, it was interesting to me. I didn't get a chance to look into it further, but when I looked up the pasuk, which I already quoted, of the Karat al Shabbat Oneg, it jumped out at me that the next pasuk in that paragraph, and I have not got a chance to take to really let it sink in, think about what's happening in these pasukim in Sefer Yeshayahu. But it says in pasuk Yudalid, Az Titaneg al Hashem, which is the pasuk that's quoted all the time about the owning that will be in Olam Haba. And I don't think it's sound that those two psukim are juxtaposed one to another. Again, I don't have any more depth that I haven't got a chance to sit in it. But that I saw immediately the next pasuk in context is Az Tidneg Al Hashem, which is implying not just the Oneg of Shabbat, parallel the Oneg of Shabbat with the Oneg of Olam Haba. The two are one and the same. One is a microcosm of the other. Tremendous implications of every single week, all of history, and our topic of Shabbat Bereishis. Six is always the process of becoming, and seven is always being in that identity that we become over the course of that process of six. Questions, thoughts, comments until this point? That was a lot of heavy stuff. Clear? Yeah.
Okay, I really like that, but I feel like a week is short, and there's only so much that you can accomplish in one week.
100%. But we are supposed to accomplish as much as we can. And we are supposed to make it as productive a week as we possibly can. That's the goal. That's the goal. Period. End of story. I want to do one last piece. It'll take a couple of minutes. That will just preface what we're going to talk about next time and is both the cap of this year and the beginning of next year. For those of you who do have to run, we'll recap next year as well. Okay? But let's close off this year and also foreshadow where we're going with this. Keeping all of this in mind, let's now take a quick look at section number 2. The section of the story in Gan Eden. It's in source number 10. Take a look in your Chumashim. Just open up in your Chumashim in Perek Dalet. In Perek Bet. Pasuk Dalet. Eda toldot ha-shamayim va-aretz v'hi bar'am. V'yom asot ha-shem elokim eretz v'shamayim. These are the generations of the heavens and the earth when they were created, when God created the heavens and the earth. Skipping forward, Pasuk Zayin, Vayitzar Hashem Elohim et ha'adam afar min ha'adama. We have the story of the creation of man. Now, as we said before, all the sources in the Chazal that talk about this indicate to us, when did this story take place? On day 6. Question number 1, why are they separated? Why is this not explained in the story of creation? As we'll look at it more deeply next time, why is it presented in a different order? Why is everything switched around? Here we have man being created, then he's put in Gan Eden, and then the vegetation comes out, and then the animals come out only afterward, and then so this whole different story that's going on. Different commands, different story, different interactions, different ramifications. What's happening with these two stories? But for our purposes right now, in the context of everything that we've talked about, if we're going to claim that the story of Gan Eden, which includes, as you all said, what does it include? The fates. If the story of Gan Eden and Chet Adam HaRishon happens during the 6 days of creation, based on how we've defined the 6 days of creation, what does that mean? See it the other way. What are those 6 days about? Definitionally. A process of? We didn't destroy. What 6 days did you have? What are these 6 days of? Creation. If the story of Gan Eden and the story of Chet Adam Rishon takes place during Sheish Yemei Bereishit, that means that it must be that in the context of the story of Gan Eden, something is being created. Or it wouldn't be there. Because Sheish Yemei Bereishit is a process of creation, which is going to force us to look at the story of Gan Eden in a very different way. We have to dignify the chet and deal with the chet, What we're going to have to do next time in comparing the presentations in these two stories and understanding more deeply what's happening in the context of the story of Gan Eden is we have to, based on everything we've said in this shiur, we have to answer the question, if the fate takes place in Sheshit Bereishit, what is being created in the story of Gan Eden? We'll pick up with all of that, Bezrat Hashem, on Monday. Shalom, everybody.